I am Ashada.
And I'm Diara.
And welcome to Nationwide,
where young voices shape the conversation.
From social issues to politics,
crime to careers,
mental health to personal growth,
we're tackling the topics that matter to you.
No sugarcoating.
Just real, unfiltered conversations
with the next generation.
Welcome to the Nationwide podcast. I'm Diara Springer. This episode comes on the cusp of one of the nation's critical issues so far for the year. At the time of this recording, at least, Barbados has had 15 homicides, including the tragic loss of 13-year-old Jonathan Chase. And it's what many are calling a crime crisis here in Barbados. So that's what today's episode will be all about, the issue of crime. And here with me, I have a guest. I'll let him go ahead and introduce himself.
I'm Aki Laifo, principal of the Laifo School. I'm a father too, two boys and daughter. I've worked with at-risk youth, former parish ambassador. So there are things that I have a vested interest in when it comes to young men here in the country, and also to do with things related to education, because I believe a lot of what's happening is as a result of education. And I think it's important that you give the opportunity to speak on these issues, because I'm also the average Barbadian, right? Like the average person walking the street going to buy, you know, groceries. I also play volleyball, so I understand being out at court, you know, and things can happen. And it's important that we as a society have discussions about these things, especially when they escalate.
With Barbados having 15 homicides so far, including the killing of a child, Jonathan Chase, what do you think that says about the current state of our island?
The truth is, it is an unfortunate tragedy. It is also one of these situations where we speak about it after the fact. So obviously, once it has happened, you kind of do an analysis of how did it happen. I think that we have to take a serious look at the crime situation in Barbados. It is out of hand, in my view. Most of what we do outside of set policies, we have to look and see if the policies are actually working. You're talking about 15 homicides this year. To the best of my knowledge, I think last year, during the period of January 1st to April 1st, we've had 7 homicides. We say homicides because some were stabbings. But for me, the interesting statistic is that it has been young men killing other young men.
Right.
And that is something that I think needs to be addressed or researched. Or it's not just a similar saying, why are they doing this? It is more to do with how did they arrive at the thought process of this is the action I'm going to take because a dispute couldn't be resolved, or because there's another issue, or because me and this person, we don't agree. You know, why are our young men choosing these, you know, serious acts of violence against and towards each other?
Mm-hmm. Well, let's get in a bit on that, because even when looking at this year's statistics, the homicides, most of them, as you rightfully said, are men, and young men, most under the age of 35. Why do you think this specific demographic is so prone to crime?
That's a very good question. A lot of it has to do with who's raising the children, okay? And this is also a conversation that Barbados is not, we're not really having it. The parenting, there's a parenting issue in Barbados as well. There was a time where many of our citizens, politicians even spoke about, you know, the single parent home. But I don't think it's a scenario where we can just identify one use case, one issue. I think it's a multiplicity of issues. For example, the education system. I did some research and looked at most of the alleged perpetrators, because some obviously have not gone through the process of the court system as yet. Some are on remand. And when you look at their educational background, and I'm not saying the school they went to, because that is the first thing that the average Barbadian will look at. This is the school. I'm looking at what took place in their educational background from primary to secondary school. You would see that in many cases, there has always been a lack or an absence of comprehension, understanding what do I need to do. So in teaching, like I would say to my students, comprehension comes from the word, the verb to comprehend, which means to understand. And understand means to grasp the meaning of. So I don't think that most of the young men grasp the meaning of the scenario or situation that they're in from a young age. If you look at some of the homicides and when the court report has been issued, you would see that some have priors. How is it that it is easy for someone who has been accused of something to get bail, come back out, and then, you know, murder somebody or stab someone? I think that the young men are not taking time to resolve issues. And outside of the education and the family environment, then you have who's really raising children, right? I've had this discussion many times over the past few years. And I think also because of this demographic, the internet is raising the children today. You give a child a cell phone, they can go on TikTok, Instagram, they can view anything they want to view. Parental controls, unless you're really going to sit down and monitor your child every day, I would not say that they're inefficient. It is just that parents have to take the time to make sure that they're monitoring these students, who they're talking to, where they're going, and introduce conflict resolution, education, scenarios, lessons, teaching, so that students learn how to deal with these issues. As you would realize, the boys have been struggling, for example, at the common entrance exam, BSSE, and there's a correlation between the mass. You know, most of the wider public would think that the mass is a mass issue, as in numeracy. It's actually comprehension. Most of the issues stem from the student not being able to understand how to solve the problem. As simple as saying John has two apples, Fred has one apple. You know, how many apples do they have in total, or what's the ratio of the apples they have respectively? The student's cognitive ability to use comprehension skills to figure out what is the problem asking me to solve. Right. Is the same scenario that comes up, me and this person over here, we have a disagreement. What are the tools that I have that can solve this disagreement? So besides the access, which is probably a question you have later, the access to the tools, the weapons, the whatever, it is why would I think that this is the only option necessary to solve the disagreement that we have? And I think that the boys from young, from as early as 5, 6, we have to start teaching both males and females, but also the young men, how to resolve conflict in positive ways.
And do you think that music has a part to play with that? Because, you know, Voice Cartel is coming to Barbados, and it has been out there in social media, in person as well. Persons are arguing, why is Cartel coming here? You know, his music promotes violence. And a couple of years back, we had the situation with the Trojan Rhythm.
Yes.
Which featured Mool and Lil Ray. And it was a whole debacle about it. Do you think that music has a part to play in the situation of crime?
You're asking very good questions today. I just want to point that out. The thing about music is that, let's look at when we first start listening to music as a child, we listen to what is given to us. When we have the option to make choices as we become older, we're able to choose, you know, what we want to eat, what we want to drink. Same thing goes for music. I think that it is the exposure to the music that the children listen to. There was a time before we would say the van culture, but many parents have now become able to purchase vehicles because the financing has become easier to get a vehicle. So less of our students are on the public transportation system. Therefore, they're exposed to the music that the parent listens to. But when they go to school, when you give them their own cell device to use, tablet, laptop, whatever, they now are exposed to different music genres, rap, dancehall, reggae, and they can make decisions for themselves. I would say that yes, many of the lyrics are suggestive, lewd, or vulgar, but I'm not going to sit here and pretend I also didn't listen to some of the same music, to some of the same Vybz Kartel or 50 Cent or Idoneon. The thing is that it still comes down to choice. You can listen to an artist project a particular lifestyle, which some do or some don't. Some project to be gangsters or mafia bosses, when in real life, they're just projecting this because they think that that is what is going to sell the music. I think that the students and the children listening to music have to realize that it is not reality.
Right.
But again, because of how they've been raised, the parents aren't as involved in the rearing of the child. So therefore, I remember, for example, when Vibes Cartel signed Clarks, they went to school. And I felt bad because most of the boys had Clarks. It influenced their decision making, but they were not the ones that bought the shoes. It again came to the parents, because my parents, they're not buying these shoes for me. So you have to look at, how is the music being interpreted? Do I say in a song where someone says, you know, pick up a gun and shoot somebody? Because I've heard a song coming up from a Trinidad dancehall artist, God's name thing, we all know who that is, where they're saying the same thing. So where do you say, this is something that I want to do? You have to separate what the music is saying from what you think is right and wrong. And the morality is where the issues come in from, the values. We talk about the church. I don't think it's necessarily a church thing. I think that it has to do with how you respond to the music. Look at gospel music. There are people that listen to gospel music and they have a certain response, right? There's some that listen to rap, have a different response. But I think a lot of it, again, comes back down to the small environment that that child is exposed to. Do they have friends that will, we use the term gaslight them to respond to a particular song? I think it's more nuanced than just music. Mm-hmm. It is easy for us to say, as adults who also may listen to some of the same artists, that the music is influencing these children to do these acts. What I would say in relation to the Vibes Cartel coming is that the timing is not the best. It is not the best timing to have a dancehall artist who was free from prison, regardless of, you know, whatever took place, to say, okay, here's an artist that we're going to put on showcase, especially given who the promoters are. That is the issue that I am having, right? But the parents have to be the ones to make determinations about what their children listen to up until a point, and then you have to educate the child on separating the music so that it doesn't become a cultural influence. Is kind of the way I want to... See, I'm trying to get away from using the term influencer.
Yeah.
Because an influencer is not somebody who influences. It's a really misused term. Influencers can come in various forms or fashion. So you have artists that influence in terms of saying, well, we want you to buy this particular brand of cornflakes or shoes. But students, again, they and children, they respond to who they like. So if they like an artist, I feel they will more gravitate towards that. So we need to find more artists that kind of give more wholesome music. But again, the children still have the devices that they can go and search and check who's the latest dancehall artist who's coming out with what they call the hardest tune. You know, they don't look at lyrics the same way we did when we were growing up, because we would have read Animal Farm and, you know, novels in English literature. Students don't read. So therefore, again, it comes back to comprehension. So they don't have the tools to understand what it is that they're listening to. And therefore, they make decisions, I don't think based on the music, but I think the culture the music represents is what they want to be a part of.
On the topic of influence, do you think it's important to have more positive male role models? And I say male not to, you know, attack the men or the boys, but, you know, if crime, majority we see it happening to the men. So that's why I'm specifically saying men. Do you think that it's important to have more positive male mentors in the life of a young man? And how can they go about having those positive male mentors?
Okay. Again, good question. Let's look at the work of Fabian Sargent, for example, who is the head of Men's Empowerment Network. They have a program that they work with at-risk youth in schools. Now, to those who may not know about it, this program is one of the programs where you have individuals who are given the time to volunteer to mentor young men in primary and secondary schools. It's a really good program, and I think that it should get more support for the government. I'm not saying it because I'm not part of the network, but I'm saying it is one program that needs to be multiplied by five. The idea of a male role model, I will use my dad as an example, who was also a former principal and an educator. My father would say to me when I was younger, don't look up, to people because they would always let you down. And as a young man, I asked him, what? You said you have to determine for yourself what is good, what is wrong, what you think you should do. And that comes from reading. So from very young, I would be at the library reading books. I would read every day. So you begin to form your own perception of the world. Now, again, we're talking about a time when the internet was not what it is today. The male role models, also I have to be conscious of, these are young men that are looking up to you, and not looking up to you in a way where you're saying, but they want to be you. In some cases, yes, you want to emulate what you see is positive. But in other cases, it's that they don't have any other representation of a male figure. And I remember when they first went in to teach and they went to interview at the ministry, they wanted male teachers and they interviewed to teach in primary school and they didn't get the job. And it's not to say that it was, you know, that they have more females than males in the school, which I think they do. I think the issue is that we don't see the value in the men. You see it in the court system in terms of child custody or, you know, the mother getting the child. I don't want to say a favoritism, but there's a preference towards the female raising of a child, whereas there are males that can raise children. So if you're talking about mentorship, you're talking about the ability to raise children, and not as a parent, because I raise children as a teacher, you know, in the various activities that I do. But you have to spend time getting to know the child.
Yeah.
And I think that is one of the areas where our education system will have some deficits, because the way how males interact is not only the same way how females interact. And it's not as gray and white as that. But I would say you have to give them the space. Let's look at the Jonathan Chase incident, for example, which is, you know, something that's dear to me, because I teach some of his friends who couldn't come to lessons because they were feeling hurt and they didn't understand why this could happen to him. Now, you have a situation where you're going to watch a netball game. We have volleyball at Bay Street, at Deacons, at Chargers, different places. So if you have male role models going and taking students places, letting them see, you know, the sights and sounds of Barbados, yes. But here it is, you have a situation where somebody was just shot. They weren't targeted.
Mm-hmm.
But when they listened to what his father said about him, yes, he was a very intelligent young man. They would have conversations. They talk. That is a positive male role model in that child's life.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to have them in different places as a coach. You know, one of the children may be doing football, as a teacher at school, as a lessons teacher, as somebody on the road. I think that we have to look at, where are these young men interacting with males? What is their representation to have a positive male role model? What do we determine as a positive male role model? Somebody that carries their life in a particular way, someone that speaks a particular way, someone that has a particular job. Those are questions we need to find answers to, so we can create a model for mentorship where we have more males and men coming forward to assist the younger men in understanding what their role should be. I would say should be in society, because some will deviate from the path. But if you have a framework and a structure in place, it will actually assist with that in the long run.
So far, we really touched on the mindset of the individual, which for sure is a very integral part in the fight against crime. But I want to delve in more on the tools that are used, specifically the guns. What is your view on the guns? How are they getting in? What do you think? What security measures, border measures can be implemented to prevent the guns from getting in?
Okay. Well, there are two ways to get anything into Barbados. Let me say any country, but because Barbados is an island, you're not talking about a border where we're separated from another state. So you have air and sea. So you have freight by plane or cargo vessel on a ship, container, whatever the case is. So those are the two things which are controlled by the port agencies. I think that the government is not being realistic about the border patrol. We need to get serious. I cannot accept that we do not know how guns are coming into the country. That is a ridiculous assertion, because there are two ways. and they have to pass through something. So it either comes down to the process, the framework, or the individuals. You can't bring guns into Barbados and somebody does not know. You know how? Because somebody has to receive them. Somebody has to ship them. Somebody has to transport them. Now, maybe the person transporting may not know, but the person that sent them definitely know that they're sending guns. The person that received them definitely know that they're receiving the guns. You have a situation where representatives from the government have met with gangs, and they don't want the public to be distracted by this gang thing as though that is the way how this has been orchestrated. I don't really believe that gangs are bringing in guns into Barbados. I think that that is a fallacy. I think that people who have access to money and power are the ones bringing in weapons, maybe use the term weapons, because there are a lot of stabbings too. So, you know, when I saw, for example, the government speaking about a crackdown on toy guns, I thought that was the most ridiculous thing ever. How is that a representation of what is going on? You know, you need to spend time looking at how the policies affecting the access to the weapons while dealing with why would they choose the weapon in the first place. You had a situation where, you know, you wanted cameras in the port, but port workers didn't want cameras. How can you as a government mandate some things but not other things when it's killing your citizens? I think that, you know, you can't just say that, you know, guns don't do the killing people do. That is an easy way of saying, well, you know, is a weapon that you use for whatever personal protection. Because when you do your research, you would realize most of the shootings, I will not say all, because if you look at the situation at Lord Erskine Santa First Center with the driver, I'm pretty sure he had a licensed firearm, right, to carry. Most of the homicides have been from illegal firearms. So the issue is not just that, there may be somebody who's licensed to import a gun, and if it's registered and the checks and balances for the ammunition, the issue is these illegal firearms are getting into the hands of people who make bad choices. So why would I, Mr. Eiffel, want an illegal firearm? Why would I want a legal firearm? And if that is the process, how do we go about getting a firearm? How do we go about getting a legal firearm? We have to really get serious. I don't like to say set up a task force. There are things the government can do, because in the same way how you can tax, and tomorrow we can hear there's a tax on jackets because Barbados is a warm climate. So, you know, if you're importing jackets, it's 25%. How is it that you're not doing things to stop the guns from coming in the country? Don't tell me that you cannot reduce. I would use the word reduce, because you're still going to have instances of people finding loopholes in the system. Make the border security more secure. Have, you know, different people come in. The same way how the Auditor General is not a part of the political parties, have somebody independent monitor the process, deal with the companies that ship large containers that can hide something in a corner, right? Or a cargo vessel or aircraft where, you know, a parcel may come in and it may be screened, but I may have a lead top and you may not see what it is. Find ways where you search every single thing that is worn. That is for the ones coming in. How do you deal with the ones that are here? Now, you have scenarios where a youngster is, I don't like to use the term on the block, because he grew up in Black Rock and they would have gone to Belfield with guys who are accused of being on the block or playing with tennis and whatever. How do these individuals get the guns? Let's assume they didn't bring them in. I need to know somebody selling a gun or selling guns. Oh, okay, let me talk to this person. Then I have to have the money. If I'm not working in a conventional job or doing this, how am I getting money to buy the gun that I can't get legally? That is part of the problem. So you need to find a way. I know the Attorney General had a gun amnesty maybe once or twice at one point in time in the past. But if you're a bad boy, you are not going to walk up and turn in the gun. I've heard Barbadians suggest, I think it was Duterte, the former president, I think, in Philippines, who got really serious, right? But the crime situation in the country at the time got out of hand. Trinidad is the same thing, right? But then I remember when the police commissioner, I think it was Gary Griffith at the time, he got serious and his crime reduced, but then they replaced, right? So you need to get people involved and policies that really get to the matter, because Jonathan Chase should not have happened, right? You should not have senseless killings of any person. But I accept that it is a difficult task to run a country with different individuals, different belief systems. But the same way how you import clothing or you import chemicals or whatever it is, and you have a screening process, I can't accept that the screening process is not the same for those people who are trying to bring legal firearms into Barbados. And I keep saying this all the time, and it sounds bad to say, but until it is one of the politicians' children that is shot, it may not come. And they said this a few years ago on Brass Stats. I remember he said to Barry Wilkinson, he said, we don't get serious about things until it's somebody's child who is a bigger, because then they see the reality when it hits home. When Jonathan Chase, his father and mother have to bury that young man, the weight and gravity of knowing that he could be anything he wanted to be, it's totally dashed away. They have to live with that reality. When it is you who's a policy maker, and decision maker, you have to then live with that reality as an individual. So then you may be forced to place policies in place because now it has affected you directly.
At the beginning of the year, we saw a reshuffle in cabinet. And with this reshuffle, Minister Kurt Humphrey added crime prevention to his portfolio. What are the key areas that you believe he needs to address to effectively tackle the issue of crime?
Okay, so let's go back a step. This government has made a point of, to me, when a minister becomes unpopular with the public, they're changed. Mm-hmm. Someone responsible for governance of or responsibility with a portfolio. Minister Humphrey, to my mind, is one of the more popular members of parliament. To tackle the crime issue, he first has to understand what the issue really is. The word crime encompasses a lot. It's not just about the murders and stabbings. It's to do with the cases that are not reported, that mm-hmm. we hear about, or alleged cases or scenarios where police are looking for a wanted person in connection with a matter. I think that for him to effectively deal with it, he first has to empower the police to do more. One, the salaries of police definitely needs to be raised, because you bring many things into question. There were hours, additional hours, and I don't know if the compensation warrants the risk that they're placing their lives in. I don't think it does. Again, this is just my view. He has to look at the border patrol, the airport, seaport, take a serious look and do things that are unpopular, which is one of the things that I don't understand why this, both parties are responsible for it. They do not make decisions that become unpopular. If the port requires cameras and screening processes, put them in place. If the port workers have issues, well, deal with it, right? That's what the unions are there for. Find ways to solve these issues, even if you become unpopular as a minister, because then I can say as a citizen, okay, I can see that he is working. I can see that this is effective. They also need to have programs in place where they go after the actual individuals, entities that bring guns in. A gun is not $25. If you bring in a shipment of guns, it will cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. So the average person cannot bring in these weapons. And I don't believe, like I've said before, that it is the average Barbadian bringing in weapons into the country. So Minister Humphrey would have to then say, okay, who are these individuals that could potentially be bringing weapons into the country? How can we have a more effective screening process for these individuals? What are the gun policies in Barbados as it relates to access, owning a firearm? What are the deterrents? I was having a conversation again a few weeks ago about the death penalty. Mm. And as you know, we are a signatory to the UN Charter, so therefore, you know, hanging is not on the table. I don't necessarily think that even if it was, it is the deterrent that the public needs, but the perpetrators do not see a correlation between I'm killing someone and therefore this is going to happen.
Right.
when you look at the videos of these young men going into the court for Raymond or, you know, whatever, they're like, yeah, yeah, what's going on? It's a social media something, and they think that's part of the psyche, right? Minister Humphrey has to seriously address the deficits in what is happening with the unemployment too, because there's always a causal a link between unemployment and the rising crime in any niche. And I think since COVID, the unemployment has decreased. Government obviously may bring statistics to suggest that it has increased, which it might, but any statistic can be analyzed for good or for bad. It may have increased in certain areas, but the individuals who were out of work the longest may still be unemployed. Other individuals who may have lost a job and unemployed for a year may be employed. So I think that, you know, they have to get serious. I don't think they're getting serious. I'm tired of hearing that we're going to have a town hall meeting, we're going to have a stakeholder meeting, we're going to have this meeting, we're going to have this talk. You know, it is talk, but no action. And then you're losing children, you're losing young men. You know, I've seen, again, on social media, someone said, well, was the gang killing the other gang members? I mean, how do you think that's a good thing? Mm-hmm. Because they're not killing your son today. They could be going to kill a gang member of a rival gang or something else. And then, you know what? Your son is taking a walk to the supermarket, or he's on his way to school, and he's caught up in something, you know. So for Minister Humphrey, and it's interesting, it's unfortunate because this is really for the Attorney General to address. It keeps shifting, and I don't understand why, you know, and it bothers me because you have a Prime Minister who's an attorney at law. You have an Attorney General who has to be an attorney at law, who understand policy making from a legal standpoint. But then you're giving portfolios to individuals who may only understand it from being a member of parliament. Because then you understand, you know, dealing with bail, you understand dealing with, you know, clients on remand. I don't know, Kurt Humphrey has a very difficult task because he has to also balance the expectations of the public. You know, what are they going to expect to happen? Is there going to be a curfew? You know, that is a conversation that needs to be had. You know, are we going to have these as things that will be brought up? How do we implement safe spaces for, you know, children to go? Security, the police, like I said, they're underpaid. I think they're also understaffed. So he is going to have a difficult task ahead. Yes, he will have the support of the government, and that's what happens when, you know, you have a 30-0. So that is going to be there. But I think that the port issue, the workers, because it's some individual, it's not a robot or AI taking a gun from here and just giving it to somebody. There is a process to acquiring it. I think they're going to have to get serious with these laws and implement some serious deterrence for the individual. Now, I could suggest and say, yes, I would love to see Hain return a serious deterrence, but that is just my view. There are other aspects of social reform that have to take place for the people of Barbados to become better. But I would not want to see a situation where, and I said this, and I'll say it so that I'm on record saying it. I said, when we've had the stabbings in the schools, which is also part of the same problem, those children get older. And then the weapon changes from the knife to a gun. And I said, I do not want to see a situation where we have a mass shooting in Barbados at a school. But it more than likely will happen if we do not get these things under control. And saying that is not going to happen will not prevent it from happening, because you must see where these trends are going. Again, access. So you'll have children having access to their parents' weapons, even if the parent doesn't tell them. You know, we know where our parents keep things, and we can search in the box, the code you can figure out. These are things I do not want to see a situation where that is something that happens. But because of the escalation and the frequency, it's not just the escalation, it's how often. Every day you see some act of violence taking place in Barbados. It was not like that when I was in secondary school or primary school. It's like that now. And I think that we have gotten softer and very lenient on these things. And it it bothers me because every individual has a right to representation in court. And this is one of the most beautiful parts of it. But when you see who the attorneys at law who are representing them, they're also, or they have been, or they will become members of parliament. What changes when they're representing a client who is accused of murder, because let's use the correct terms, or alleged to have shot someone, then they become a member of parliament? What policies do you expect that person to put in place when their government no longer is holding office? They have to now return back to doing that same thing. That is also part of the problem. But you're not going to expect a prime minister or attorney general or someone, or the deputy prime minister, to talk about these issues when they're also part of the same problem, you know, being attorneys at law. And I think that we have to have sensible conversations about these things. And get, even though I'm talking to you and I don't want to be talking, I think that some form of action needs to take place, because I do not want to open the Nation newspaper tomorrow and see that somebody else has been shot and killed. But that is the reality of Barbados, unfortunately, right now. And until we get serious and we really get serious and put measures in place, and they know, you can follow countries that have had, like Colombia or Philippines, that the crime escalated exponentially, and they had to crack down and create a separate police unit to go in and give them special powers to arrest if you're doing a crime, they get shoot. These are things they don't have issues with. But again, that may create another problem where the police may shoot someone accidentally, which has also taken place. So it needs to be managed. I wish Minister Humphrey all the best. I honestly do. And also the government. You know, it's not about a party or a government, is about every single person that lives here can be affected by what some individual does who is not thinking about their best interests. They're thinking about dunning somebody or killing someone over something frivolous or whatever it is. So until we get really serious, this is going to continue, unfortunately, and I don't want to see that happen, but I don't see it changing until, you know, they put serious measures in place to curb the violence, stabbings, the murders, I call them firing squads now, because every time I hear shooting. So it's just not going to change until we get serious.
Mm-hmm. Akil, thank you so much for stopping in. Thank you for sharing your candor, your passion, and your experiences as both a father and an educator. And to the viewers and listeners, thank you for listening. We encourage you to keep the conversation going online and in our communities. This is an issue that we have to tackle holistically. We need all hands on deck. Everybody has a part to play in this issue of crime in Barbados. Once again, I'm Diara Springer, and this has been the Nationwide Podcast. Until next time, please do be careful and stay safe.